Welcome to Pentagon Solutions on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Federal News Radio reporter Scott Massioni. My guests today are Kevin Bonanno, Deputy Director of the 744th Communications Squadron for the Air Force District of Washington, and Bill Schultz, Chief Technology Officer and Chief of IT Acquisition for the 844th Communications Squadron. Today we'll be talking about the Shared Computing Environment, or SCE, which is a single security architecture. Kevin, you announced the SCE back in April of 2015, and it's been rolled out in four different phases. Can you tell us about the progress of the SCE and where it is now?
Sure. So it's actually a shared computing environment. So basically a big mass of servers, you know, compute power as well as storage. So stuff that makes things go fast and stuff that helps us store whatever we decide to store. You know, right now, on the Nipper side, we're in phase three. We're in the process of upgrading server and memory capabilities, and we're looking at phase four, which is going to give us the ability to kind of address all of our power and speed and compute capability in a software way. So if you're familiar with, like, Amazon Web Services, for example, we won't necessarily give customers the ability to you know, create servers on the fly and add storage capabilities on the fly, but it'll be very similar to that environment, and we'll walk our customers through it. On the SIPR side, I think we're in phase one. We're basically tasked with catching that up to the NIPR side. There's some challenges there in terms of addressing funding. We're working on our enclave accreditation or our network accreditation there. So we're in process to basically speed up the SIPR side and catch it up to the NIPR side.
So what kind of challenges are you having? You said there was like a funding challenge. What does that entail mostly?
You know, the funding challenges are just getting the funding to do the upgrades. So far, we've been very, very successful. But as you know, money is getting tighter across the enterprise. But even though money is tightening up, we still believe that we can hit the end of phase three for both NIPRNet and SIPRNet by the end of 2017, at which time we'll start working on our software-defined data center capabilities.
And just to be clear, the NIPRNet is the non-secure internet protocol router that DoD uses for unclassified information, while the SIPRNet is for secure information. Now, could either one of you tell us about what your customers might be seeing now versus what they'll be seeing in the future once the SCE is fully rolled out?
Yeah, so this is Kevin. It's going to be largely invisible, but what they're going to see is better performance all around and more capacity, right? So if they have requirements that wouldn't ordinarily be met in an environment that's maybe older and, you know, has less capability, now we're going to be able to meet those requirements faster with better, you know, compute power and better storage.
I could probably elaborate a little bit. We built the shared computing environment with redundancy and survivability in mind. Everything that went into the environment had to increase speed, capacity, or reliability, or it didn't go in there. The environment as we built it includes a disaster recovery site where everything is replicated. So, you know, if we lose something on the production side, the DR side will pick up the load, so the customer will never notice that there's an outage. So what the customers really are going to see is a marked increase in speed, increase in capacity, and a great increase in reliability.
Now, you talked about these redundancies that are in the SCE. Can you tell us at what level they're built into the environment?
Right now, just the environment itself is ultra-redundant. And then, you know, from my perspective, where I'm more focused on the data center and what sits in it, we're building out a mirror version of the SCE right on Andrew's proper, basically. So what will happen when we hit phase four and beyond is you'll see redundancy and resistance to failure that spans not only the shared computing environment itself, but also a mirror copy of that. And then, you know, our thoughts are to to pick up the mirror and move it somewhere where you will get, you know, kind of geographic redundancy.
Now, this is a pretty massive project. I think you, your architecture will be able to increase your capacity between 100,000 to 200,000 users. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't know if we'll ever get there, but sure. I mean, that's entirely possible. Well, I would say, you know, we'd be looking at the 25,000 user range. You know, the idea is if we need to grow, we have an architecture that can grow with increased demands.
DoDCIO's vision is that each base will have no more than one data center. Right now, there's numerous data centers out there and numerous servers all over the base, all over the bases that we support. Numerous organizations, and our vision is to build one data center where all of the tenants and occupants of the base can move their applications.
You brought up data centers and savings, and one of the big things that the DoD CIO is trying to do is create these savings within DoD data centers. Is that something that you guys deal with at all?
Definitely. From Kevin's side, so, you know, we're looking at ways to minimize our costs. New technologies, for example, we're looking at modular data centers. You know, I guess the analogy there would be if I had a six-pack of Coke in a big server room and I wanted to cool that six-pack of Coke down to about 50 degrees, you know, how much power and electricity, you know, and cooling is that going to require to accomplish that task? Well, if I put that same six-pack of Coke in a refrigerator, I can cool it down far more effectively. That's analogous to how we're approaching, you know, at least the mirror, maybe even the primary shared computing environment. We're trying to tackle moving that into like a modular data center, which is analogous to that refrigerator.
This may be kind of a silly question, but you know, these rooms are pretty big. They're packed full of servers. How do you keep those rooms cool? And also, how do you kind of figure out what temperature it needs to be at and the best way to keep it at that temperature?
Yeah, sure. So from the data center point of view, I trust my data center manager guys to look at the overall requirement for HVAC. If we need to up our capabilities, we have that option. We also use in the SCE something called in-row cooling, which better circulates air and better recycles the existing air without using as much resources. So, you know, kind of our green footprint is better using in-row cooling in that environment. And then also, we've enclosed the shared computing environment in a big glass room, so it isolates it from some of the inefficiencies of the regular data center.
I know you can't go into too much detail on this, but cybersecurity is on everyone's mind. It's one of the big tenets of DoD's cyber strategy. How are you keeping the SCE cyber secure and keeping hackers from getting in?
Yeah, and hey, Bill, you want to take that one? Because I don't want to steal your thunder.
Okay. Well, you know, the Air Force follows some pretty strict guidelines for cybersecurity, and they use a layered approach that starts with, you know, at our level, the risk assessment and accreditation process, and continues, you know, with continual process of applying patching and monitoring the networks for compliance and risks. There are a number of other security measures that the Air Force does take, but we prefer not to discuss those in an open forum.
And I would just add from, you know, kind of the data center perspective, we are constantly reevaluating our security posture. I would love to put cameras all around the data center. I'd love to get a man trap, but, you know, budgets being what they are, you know, sometimes that's not possible. But what we are doing is reviewing our security processes and procedures, making sure that folks that have access to the data center have legitimate access to that data center. We scrub our list on a regular basis. So what we're trying to do is provide the best physical security on top of, you know, the cyber securities that we get from the Air Force.
What do you do for things like just the average person? You know, everyone's not a cybersecurity expert, and everyone is a kind of their own point of entry every time they log into their computer. Do you have regular training, or do you have regular, reminders to people?
Yes, to all of the above, sir. And not only do we have regular training, but it's the completion of training is actually tied to your continued access to the network. In other words, if you fail to complete your training, your network access is suspended until the training is complete.
And we have graduated levels of training, right? So, for example, an administrator would require a Security Plus certification or, you know, such similar certification to ensure that not only just do they understand the risks posed when you have an administrative account, but also understand, you know, the basic policy for maintaining, I would say, elevated access to the network and or elevated access to the compute solution that we provide.
Going back to the data centers a little bit, you know, we talked about the cooling, but what other kind of maintenance do these data centers require, you know, when it comes to cleaning or just everyday, you know, watching and maintenance and kind of looking over the analytics and everything?
Yeah, sure. Biannual removal of dust and debris, contaminant. You know, just there's a lot of work going on at any given day in the data center, so we have a policy of keeping the floors clear. And, I would describe it as all the modern challenges a data center would require for its upkeep and maintenance. We have a data center calendar that we keep filled up with those kinds of efforts.
With regards to the system design, you know, we built the shared computing environment with the thought that we may not have as many people in the future as we do now. So we're trying to use technology as a force multiplier. So the environment requires little in the way of continuous maintenance. You know, we patch operating system and other software that's installed. But with with respect to the equipment itself, other than constant monitoring and control that we employ for any other data center, it's not really all that different. I think the only exception to that would be that with the redundancies we've built into the system, an outage can be, let's say we can ignore an outage if it happens because the system redundancies will pick up the processes and we can survive and customers may not even know until we've ordered a new replacement piece of equipment and installed it.
We're talking with Kevin Bonanno and Bill Schultz, who worked on the SCE, or Shared Computing Environment, for the Air Force District of Washington. I'm your host, Federal News Radio reporter Scott Massioni, and you're listening to Pentagon Solutions. Welcome back to Pentagon Solutions. I'm your host, Federal News Radio reporter Scott Massioni. We're talking with Kevin Bonanno and Bill Schultz, who worked on the SCE, or Shared Computing Environment, for the Air Force District of Washington. Bill, when it comes to the SCE as a whole, how does it connect with other DoD networks like the DODEN or the JRSS, or does it connect with those at all?
The Shared Computing Environment is what the Air Force would call an IPN, or Information Processing Node. And generally, the information processing node sits behind the Joint Regional Security Stack. So we depend on Big Air Force and DISA to provide all of those services that comes with the JRSS, and that makes it a little bit easier for us to manage the data center.
So we should, I guess, think of the JRSS more as like a wall, and then the architecture itself is kind of like the city where everyone kind of operates. Is that a good analogy, maybe?
Yes, sir. Or maybe like the Joint Regional Security Stack is in that hub that everything else connects to within a given region. So, you know, you have multiple data centers maybe within a region that are behind the Joint Regional Security Stack. So the people that operate that Joint Regional Security Stack provide more of an enterprise-level security. So it reduces manning and it increases efficiencies across the enterprise. And, you know, we treat everything the same that way.
When it comes to the actual customers that are going to be using the SCE, what are they going to be using it for on kind of the day-to-day operations?
Well, sir, currently we have over 25,000 customers, and they're logged in all of the time. All of the time during work hours anyway. Some of the operations are 24/7 here, and some of the applications that we house are Air Force-wide, so people are in the system all the time operating. 844th Communications Group is also dual-headed as Air Force District Washington's A6. We have two squadrons, the 744th Communications Squadron, which is Andrews, Bowling, and the rest of Air Force District Washington, and the 844th Comm Squadron, which services the Pentagon, who are also our customers. We at the group are more at the strategic level for planning and implementation, and really the squadrons are where the rubber meets the road, and they're the people that keep things running from day to day.
Right, and so the 744th Communications Squadron, which I work for, we're responsible for that, you know, the daily operations, because we do have application servers running in our environment, in the shared computing environment, on a daily basis. But we are also responsible for the data center, and we're directly responsible for our customers at Bowling and Andrews. We also have folks like me that are more responsible for operations that are Pentagon-based. So the Pentagon has its own data center. The Air Force isn't really plugged in to it. We do have equipment over there, but we don't have like a shared computing environment over there. But so they're responsible on the 844 side for operations over there.
And do you happen to know what the cost for the SCE is, the modernization plan itself, and how much it's been appropriated so far?
So far, it's cost us about $16 million. In this environment, you know, it's decreased our power requirements for Nipper side 62 to 64%, and HVAC around the same. This environment was awarded the CIO 100 award this year, which is an industry award for innovative use of technology, and Cisco's actually done a white paper on the Air Force deployment of a new IT environment to enhance their network. So this is really a big deal, and I get a lot of calls from all over the Air Force to ask about, you know, some of the technical drawings and the technical decisions, how we made those, as well as sharing some of the acquisition documentation that we've been able to put together to buy this environment.
Both of you also helped with the transition to the iPhone over the BlackBerry. Can you tell us a little bit about how you did that, how you worked on it, and what went into doing that?
Kevin, I, and a guy named Casey Gockerman from the Pentagon actually did the initial provisioning of over 1,600 iPhones in a very short period of time. And we turned them over to the 744th and 844th Comm Squadrons for scheduling deliveries and helping them get their email accounts set up on those phones. So that was a government-only job almost across the board, with the contractor only managing moving the phone numbers from the old telephones to the new. That was quite a project. We had a lot of pressure from the customers to move from the BlackBerry to more of a smartphone. And it seemed like that with most of the arguments, the iPhone won out.
Right, and then we
just went with that.
Right, and we also had, you know, kind of strategically postured ourselves to take advantage of, you know, DISA mobile technologies back in, I think it was October to about January 2014. The entire Headquarters Air Force and AFDW moved to DoD Enterprise Email, and with that grew the capability over time, thanks to a lot of work done on the Headquarters Air Force side by that same individual, Casey Gockerman, to establish a mobility program for both sides of the river, so AFDW and the Headquarters Air Force have.
And could you give us a little bit of a roadmap of how you went from zero iPhones to 1,600 iPhones?
Yeah. Bill knows this best. It was a strategic and unique effort that first involved letting a new contract for wireless services. So, Bill, take it away.
Okay. Well, the current blanket purchase agreement for telecommunications and wireless services in the Washington area requires that we recompete the contract every 2 years. So we had to sync up the implementation of iPhones with a new contract. Before we did that, we had to do a lot of research. So we talked to organizations in industry, other military organizations that have done a migration before. And working with Apple, we found something called a Bradford cart that would allow us to literally upgrade 40 devices at one time. So we bought a MacBook Pro, bought this Bradford cart, and basically delivered about 1,600 phones and just got to work and upgraded them, put the right operating systems on them, and prepared them to be delivered to the customers so that they could implement their email accounts. We had to plan a time-phased implementation, which was very difficult with such a large number of devices and with so many people in the Air Force District, Washington, that travel all over the world. We have customers that are based in Texas or Canada and many people that just travel for a living. So it was quite an interesting endeavor.
Yeah, if you can imagine the complexity, it's in terms of size, a small conference room worth of iPhones and boxes, and we had to disperse those. And it was a process of turning off a customer's existing wireless device, most likely a BlackBerry, possibly an iPhone issued on a previous contract, and basically getting the paperwork signed and the agreements signed. And phones disperse within a day's, within a day's worth of work. So a user's iPhone or BlackBerry would go off that same day, and then that they would pick up their iPhone configured there was a base configuration done, and then they would use like a tri-fold with some instructions to complete out the personal part of the iPhone configuration.
Well, both of you, thank you very much for joining us today. I'm your host, Federal News Radio reporter Scott Massioni on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, and you've been listening to Pentagon Solutions.
You've been listening to Pentagon Solutions. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Pentagon Solutions.